know what time it is? It's time to ball about the South with C. Wood. Ball about the South, coming at you from a Southern perspective on the NFL, NBA, HBCU, and of course, some of the best talk and analysis on the SEC. Real sports talk, real Southern flavor. Follow me and the show at C. Wood on Sports on X and IG. And now, it's time to ball about the South. Yes, sir, it is C. Wood. Back at you again. What's good? What's good, man? Thank you for coming in for another edition, another episode of Ball About the South with C. Wood. Really glad to have you. Definitely appreciate you taking a little bit of time out of your busy schedule to join little old me on my little old podcast right here. I do apologize for not being with you guys last week. We're going to make it up today, and we got a lot to get into, man. It's a jam-packed show. A lot going on in the sports world, to say the absolute least. Obviously, we had a big football game that we're going to talk about here in a little bit that went down last night. Tennessee Titans, Pittsburgh Steelers Thursday Night Football. Titans go down and defeat 20-16 to those Pittsburgh Steelers there in Pittsburgh. And I got a lot of thoughts on that football game. Obviously, a huge week in the NFL with the trade deadline and things of that nature going down. A couple huge trades. And obviously, a lot going on with the Tennessee Titans and here in the last couple of weeks. And I don't know, man. I got a lot of thoughts. That's all I can tell you. We'll get into that. The NBA is in full swing right now. And we're getting into this in-season tournament. To be honest with you, I'm not really up to date. I'm not in the know exactly how this thing is going to look. I do know at least that there are not going to be, like, added games except for, I guess the semifinals and the finals there in Las Vegas or something like that. But all the games, I think, fit into the regular season schedule. So I think that was one of the concerns that everyone had when this thing was announced. But as far as I know, I think everything is good with that. It's going to be interesting to see how this thing works out. But interested to see that. And that basically starts tonight. Interesting. But also, going on in the NBA, we got a huge trade that we're going to talk about. We're going to break it down here in just a couple minutes. We also going to look at what, just some early thoughts here. We're, week and a half into the season so far, a little bit over a week. A few thoughts on my mind about what we've seen so far. We're getting to all of that. And then, of course, we got a lot more football. Yeah, the college football season is really coming to the nitty-gritty right now, and we got a huge football game just to the southwest of here, where I am in Birmingham, Alabama. We got that game in Tuscaloosa with the Alabama Crimson Tide hosting the LSU Tigers, which is going to be apparently for the SEC West. I mean, the only other team that really has a shot is Ole Miss, and it's going to be interesting to see how this thing plays out, but LSU would not, even if they do win the game, they would not control their own destiny because they lost to Ole Miss earlier this season. That's one thing I had kind of forgotten. So it's really not the winner necessarily on Saturday evening. And it was a primetime game there on CBS. But obviously, if it's Alabama, then Alabama would go ahead and I think that would pretty much clinch it for them, if I'm not mistaken, I think. No, actually, no, that would not, because Ole Miss still only has one loss. Alabama needs to win one, and Ole Miss needs to lose one for Alabama to clinch this thing. So, Ole Miss, they get ranked 10th in the college football playoff ranking, which is really good for them. I think that Lane Kiffin has done a really good job there with that team this season. So I think a lot to be proud of for the fans and the alumni and students and everything there in Oxford, Mississippi. I think they've done a really good job. That's just my opinion. Anyway, so we've got a lot to talk about college football. Other matchups, obviously, we've got that we have to talk about. We'll go back and we'll look at a couple of games from last weekend. Georgia, apparently, they did not miss Brock Bowers. They didn't miss him at all. We'll talk a little bit of HBCUs as we get close to the end of the season on that front as well. As we get close to the Celebration Bowl, we'll talk SWAC standings, MEAC standings. How about the Tennessee State Tigers? 6-2. Huge game coming up this weekend. Can they get to the FCS playoffs? Interesting. We'll talk about that. And obviously, we'll get into a lot more NFL than just what we saw last night. We'll get into Falcons. We'll talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars. All those teams that, obviously stay here in the south part, here in the southern part of the United States. But I'm going to start off, man, with this James Harden thing. That is the trade that I'm talking about here in the NBA. We'll just kind of visit that really quick. I understand that he's going on to the Clippers, who have nothing to do with this footprint that we have to deal with here. But, man, James Harden has always been kind of close to me, his shenanigans, because of, I'm a huge Houston Rockets fan. And so everything that this dude has going on, I'm checking it out. And this thing here with him heading to the Clippers, huge trade. The Clippers obviously received James Harden from Philadelphia. The Philadelphia 76ers, they take back players like Marcus Morris and Nicholas Batum. And there's another name on there, Robert Covington. That's the name I was looking for, who played with the Sixers here a couple of years ago. He's going back to the city of brotherly love. Interesting case right there. And obviously a lot of other players going out to the Clippers. One major name, and that is PJ Tucker, who seems to follow James Harden just about everywhere he goes. The only places I can remember that PJ Tucker has not followed James Harden to is his first stop, which was Oklahoma City, and of course, Brooklyn. Other than that, PJ Tucker has been there for the ride every time with James Harden. But let's break this thing down, man. Obviously, and then, of course, I have to mention that there were obviously a couple picks involved. Really, maybe a couple picks that could be really beneficial for the Sixers going forward. They come, down the road a little bit, but not bad. I mean, the one thing I kind of look at this thing from a Sixers point of view first. I think the one thing that a lot of people are going to point out is that they did not bring back Norman Powell. They did not bring back Terrence Mann. Those are two big names that I think that the Sixers really wanted to bring into Philadelphia if they made this deal. And I think it's very possible that these are the two names that kind of hung things up and kind of had everybody in limbo on this whole thing. But give the Clippers credit. They did not throw those guys in, and they still got who they wanted. So, obviously, for me, that's a win for the Clippers on that side of it. But here's the deal. Excuse me. For me, I think that the Sixers got what they wanted still. Even though they did not get Norman Powell, they did not get Terrence Mann, they still brought in three capable players at least. But guess what? All three of those players have expiring contracts. That is very important. That is very important because they can sit here and flip those guys for players that they feel like fit what they want to do right now. Obviously, so they can make a trade I'm told that they're, well, I'm not told, but I'm seeing in various spaces that the Sixers are interested in guys like Buddy Hield and OG Anunoby of the Toronto Raptors and Pascal Siakam and other names that are thrown out there. Obviously, I would think that they might would be interested in a guy like Malcolm Brogdon, who I think will be traded at some point from the Portland Trail Blazers. So the Sixers have, I think, some really good assets out of this deal, even though they did not get the two guys that I think they really wanted, or at least one of them. I don't think they were ever going to get both of them, but they wanted to at least get one of them, and they did not. But that doesn't mean that they can't flip a Batum, who could be a guy that can help out, a team like, who knows, the Bulls, or there's another guy, maybe, who knows, maybe they have a package where they can bring in a Zach LaVine or something like that. I don't know. But, or DeMar DeRozan, that name has been floated around as well as a name that could really help them. But it gives them some flexibility. It gives them a lot of flexibility that they did not have. And I think that is a good thing for the Sixers. Now, and the other part of this thing, in my opinion, it frees up Tyrese Maxey even more. I mean, Tyrese Maxey, to me, is ready to take this team over. He is ready to be the, I'm not going to say the leader. Obviously, Joel Embiid is pretty much the leader of this team. But I think Tyrese Maxey is ready to be the guy that kind of runs this offense. I really do. I think there were questions, coming in. Could he be a point guard? Could he, is he more shooting guard? Obviously, look, if you can get a guy like a Malcolm Brogdon to bring in, I think that helps you even more. But I think Tyrese Maxey's ready. I mean, and I think you could maybe bring in a guy like Buddy Hield to be your shooting guard or whatever. And I think the Sixers would, I don't think they skip a beat. I really don't. I mean, they're losing James Harden that had 21 points. He averaged 21 points and 10 assists a game last season. But they still could not secure a spot higher than, what were they, fourth? In the Eastern Conference standings in the regular season. And that is in addition to having the MVP, Joel Embiid. That is in addition to having a Tyrese Maxey who could give you 20 or 25 in any given night. In addition to giving you having a Tobias Harris who could come up with 15 to 20 on a lot of nights, he could do that for you. They still could not secure a top two or three seed, and they still had to play on the road against Boston. They still were not able to beat the Celtics in that second round. Even though, I mean, you sit there and you look at it, if you go back and look at that series, the Celtics tried everything they could to hand that series to the Sixers. Everything they could, and the Sixers could not capitalize. So, I like this deal for the Sixers, man. Despite the fact of them not getting, I think, their main targets, I think they did pretty good. If they are able to move these guys and flip them, these expiring contracts that they obtained, if they're able to flip them for some help to help them this season head toward maybe an Eastern Conference. I'm not going to say championship. I don't think they're as good as the Bucks or the Celtics, even if they're able to make a move or two. But you never know. We'll see. The other side of this thing, the Clippers. I mean, for me, man, I think this is a little bit overkill. You have two or three guys right now that love to have the ball in their hand. PG, Kawhi, and Russ. For me, PG is probably, I just don't like that mix come bringing in another guy that loves to have the ball in his hand. Now, I understand that Harden averages 10 assists. I get it. And that's what so many people are looking at that just love this deal. That's what they're looking at. They're looking at that stat. But that doesn't mean that he's going to mesh with these these two other guys, really three other guys, they love to have the ball in their hand also. I mean, my goodness, if you're playing, if you have the ball in your hand as much as James Harden does, I believe, if I had the ball in my hand as much as James Harden does, I believe I could get five assists to Joel Embiid. It's just, to me, it's a good stat. And I'm not saying that James Harden isn't a very good player. I'm not saying that this doesn't really intrigue. I think it should intrigue everyone to what this team is going to look like once he gets in the lineup. I just don't think it fits, man. And I don't think PG, Kawhi, either one of those guys really need someone to just be their floor general to get them shots. They can get their own shot. But the other half of that, and I spoke about this on the Barbershop Sports Talk podcast just the other night, and those fellas, man, Maestro, Trey, man, I really appreciated being on their show, man, and it was really, I thought, a good show. If you're not checking them out, you definitely need to. Those are two knowledgeable brothers there in the Northeast, and they know what they're talking about in sports. Definitely give them a check out on YouTube or whatever, but we were talking about this very thing, and I was just like, look, man, I just don't think they need a guy that really runs the show. They don't need a Chris Paul or anybody like that. I just think Russ, to me, and I think all three of us on that show were like, man, Russ brings this team pace. He gets the ball to, you know, Paul George or Kawhi, I think, a lot quicker than James Harden would. James Harden, you know, he has to do his little dribbling spectacle at the top of the key or whatever, or between the circles around the three-point line. And then he'll finally decide, okay, yeah, let me go and get the ball to somebody. Again, I'm not saying that he's selfish or anything like that as far as that part of his game goes. But I just don't think PG and Kawhi need that type floor general. I think the Clippers would be better off just doing what they do right now and then see what can happen. I mean, look, I know that they're probably not good enough to beat teams like Denver, Phoenix. Well, I don't know about Phoenix. We're going to talk about that. That's one team I want to talk about a little bit later. The Lakers. You know, look, I don't know if they're good enough to beat either of those teams. But my thing is, I just think, man, you're getting ready to go into a new building. Everybody's talking about, well, they had to do something. No, they didn't have to do nothing. They're already going to have to pay to sign these guys, the guys that they have right now, Russ, PG, Kawhi, all of them are free agents at the end of the season, if I'm not mistaken. So they already have to sign these guys. James Harden would be the same thing. Is that what you really want going into your new building, which looks like it's going to be spectacular, man? Is that what you really want, man? You got to. When are these teams going to start thinking about their future? I understand about winning a championship now. I get it. But you're not winning. I just don't see it. I don't. And then there's the other part about James Harden. It's not just on the floor stuff. He has a press conference or whatever, I guess, to introduce him for the Clippers and everything. And he's talking about, oh, he was handcuffed, or he was, I think that must be the exact word he used. He said the Sixers had him on a leash last season. The Sixers had him on a leash, and I'm sure what he really means by that is Doc Rivers had him on a leash. Doc Rivers wouldn't let him be what he really felt like he needed to be. He said, I'm not a player that's part of a system. I am a system. I mean, after I got done laughing, man, that is the attitude you want to bring to this basketball team. It's always about James Harden. Always. That's what it was in Houston. That's what it was in Brooklyn. That's what it was in Philadelphia. And Tyronn Lue, man, is probably going to be what it's about in L.A. You got your work cut out for you, bro. That's all I can tell you. You got your work cut out for you. So we'll see what happens, man. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just, you know, I don't know. Anyway, huge trade that went down. So we'll see how this shapes everything up, man. It's going to be interesting to see. NBA-wise, looking at some of the starts around the NBA. Really good starts, man. And one that kind of sticks out. And that was a team that played, actually, they played the same team twice this week. I don't know what that's about. I mean, well, it's not, I understand about them playing the same team twice, but I'm not understanding why that same game was on national TV twice. That's the part that kind of, I didn't get that one. I mean, we saw Wembanyama and the Spurs go up against the Suns on Tuesday night on TNT. In Phoenix. Then Thursday night comes, the second game of the doubleheader is Wembanyama and the Spurs going up against the Suns on NBA TV. I'm like, okay, look, I mean, I understand about Wemby. There's going to be plenty of time to have this dude on. I'm not sure why, as a, you know, as a national audience, we got to see the same game twice. But that's what happened. The Suns lost both of them. In Phoenix. And the Spurs were, 28, 27 points in that game. And they allowed them to come back as usual. Everybody makes a run in the NBA. Suns come back. They tie the game. I think, I'm not sure. They may have taken a brief lead. And then Wembanyama and company decided they're going to take over again. But Victor, man. Victor Wembanyama, this thing, it could be really illegal what this dude's going to be able to do. I mean, this dude is not really got his feet wet for real, man. This dude put down 38 points, 10 rebounds, couple block shots in that huge win over the Suns. He has, in five games, man, the Spurs are sitting at 3-2. 3-2. Really good start. I mean, what else can you say about that? Man, Wembanyama, this dude is unreal. And we knew that this was going to be possible with this guy being 7'4", the ability to dribble the ball up the floor the way he does, lead the fast break, pull up on a dime, shoot the three ball on a pull up. He does it all. It is absolutely ridiculous. And I'm telling you, man, I don't know what people are going to be able to do with this dude. If he's at 38 points, this is his fifth game. Oh, my goodness. It is going to be wild, dude. That's all I can tell you. That's all I can tell you. Are the Spurs a playoff team? That is a valid question right now. But the other half of that game, what's up with the Suns? I understand the first game they did not have Devin Booker. All right, well, second game they had Devin Booker, and he put down 31 points. You had 28 points from KD, Kevin Durant, who looks like who looks like a point guard standing next to Wembanyama, by the way. But you got 59 points from your two big guns. Obviously, I understand Bradley Beal is not. In uniform yet, but I mean, that's pretty good production. You still lost at home. I don't know, man. It's like I said, when I, you know, kind of talked to NBA as, you know, kind of a little preview, I picked Phoenix to finish around second, third, or fourth in the West in the regular season, and I think that they'll obviously be a team that could definitely get to the second round. But I don't know beyond that. I mean, I don't know. I think defensively, and I think that's really my main concern from the jump. But I mean, I don't think they have enough on the interior. And again, maybe it was because they were playing Victor, but I don't know. But I just don't. I don't know if they have enough, dude. I'm gonna be real with you. And that would be another situation with Kevin Durant forcing his way to Phoenix. I mean, not in a James Harden way or anything like that, but I don't know, man. I'm not liking the look of this basketball team so far. The Spurs are not supposed to be doing this to the Suns, in my opinion, even with Victor Wembanyama. Lakers off to kind of a slow start out west, but they look like they're going to kind of get things together. I would not worry about the Lakers. We all know the Nuggets are going to be the Nuggets so far. They look like a machine right now. Again, that's why I felt like the Nuggets would definitely have the best record in the West coming out this season. I'm just not sure that they're going to be able to go through the playoffs and do what they did last season. That's just my thing. But I salute this team all the time. And it's not my Rockets making it to the finals, which obviously they're not. But I would definitely pull for the Nuggets in the West, man. I love the way they do their thing. Mike Malone is in complete control of that basketball team, which is what you want with your head coach. I really like what I see going on there. But let's get into our neck of the woods. Just for a quick minute before we kind of switch gears and go to football. Really good start for the Orlando Magic. Big win of a night, man, at Utah. Utah has been on another team with Lauri Markkanen. Man, they have been a team that I think a lot of people need to watch out in the West. They could be a team that steals a playoff spot or something like that. But to me, this is the game that should have been on last night. I mean, again, all respect due to Wembanyama. I get it. But people need to know about this Orlando Magic team. All right? Paolo Banchero last night, 115-113 victory over the Jazz. Paolo, reigning rookie of the year, 30 points, 9 rebounds. Paolo so far has been doing his thing, averaging 16 points, a little bit below where he was last season so far, but I believe he'll get that going. Not really worried about that. Again, we talked about Orlando, their length along the baseline. Obviously, Wendell Carter Jr. We talked about Jonathan Isaac, who's back. They're getting contributions from Markelle Fultz and Cole Anthony out on at the guard spots. We all know about Wagner. This is a solid basketball team, man. This is a solid basketball team, and they went out there and beat Utah in Utah. Utah's only 2-4 right now, but I think that's still a very impressive victory that the Magic pulled off last night. I think you look a little bit deeper, man. I think the Hawks, after a really slow start, they've won 3 in a row really quick. I'm still, not much of a believer that they're going to be a real contender right now. But not a bad start. I have to give them their props for that. The Heat, the Grizzlies, those are the two teams that I picked to win their respective divisions, and neither one of them have won a game so far. Grizzlies 0-5, the Heat 0-4. The Heat is, for me, I think is a little bit less understandable than Memphis. You got a lot of new stuff going on in Memphis. Marcus Smart, obviously they're without Ja Morant. Obviously they're going to be without Steven Adams for the remainder of the season and all that. So that, I think Memphis is really kind of going through it right now. I still think Memphis is going to be okay. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they're not going to win the division. But, Dallas is not off to a bad start there. Obviously San Antonio, was talked about them just a second ago. So I don't know about the division, but I still think Memphis is going to be okay. I would not panic if I'm Memphis fans there. I understand it's not looking good right now, but I still believe that this team will be all right in the end. But Miami, very interesting story so far, man. I'm not really sure what to make of them. I'm really not. I'm sorry. The Heat do have one win. I'm sorry. So, the two teams I picked to win the Southeast and Southwest divisions are combined 1-9 right now. Not a good start at all. Not a good start. One player that here in this, our neck of the woods down here that is off to a good start is one Brandon Miller. Let's go to his stats right now. Now, the Hornets themselves, they're 1-3, so that's not a good thing. But Brandon so far looking pretty good. Had a rough game against my favorite team the other night, the Houston Rockets. But you look at what he's done so far this season. He had a 22-point game earlier this week. He had a 17-point game on the weekend. His debut game, he scored 13. So he's averaging, let's go look at it right quick, he's averaging 15.5 points per game, 5.8, almost 6 rebounds a game, couple of assists. So Brandon Miller off to a pretty good start, if I must say so myself. I'm definitely happy to see that. I think he's going to get even better as time goes on. But, man, the Hornets as a whole, though, I don't know. LaMelo Ball, to me, kind of off to a shaky start as well. We'll see how they can get that thing going there in Charlotte. Anyway, those are just a few thoughts of mine right here with the NBA, man. We're going to switch gears right quick. And let's get on and get into some college football. Obviously, this huge weekend. No, you know what? No. Take that back. Let's go back. Let's get into this game we saw last night. Tennessee, the Tennessee Titans and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Steelers win that game 20-16. Let's talk about that for a few minutes. We'll get into some NFL talk. Then we'll transition into college football. Yeah, let's get into this Tennessee Titans game there with the Pittsburgh Steelers last night. Not nothing surprising at all, really, in that football game. The score prediction that I came up with was 20-16, 20-17, somewhere in that range. I had the Titans winning. I really thought the Titans would be able to pull that game out. Unfortunately, that was not the case. A couple things happened in that game. There were a lot of injuries, several injuries along the offensive line. Skoronski, Petit Frere, I think that's how you pronounce his name, went out of the game for a little bit as well. Skoronski, like I said, I think it was Dillard on the number 71 on the offensive line, also went out for a couple plays, if I remember correctly. Really strange night as far as that went. Then you had the Traylon Burks thing at the end there on the second to last drive for the Titans last night, and he ended up kind of coming down on his head, but it seems like he's going to be okay from what I've heard. He was able to leave with the team and everything last night, so that's excellent news on that front. But again, nothing really surprising other than the injuries and all of that about that game. It was a game that we knew was going to be a fourth quarter game. What else is new with the Titans? What else is new with the Steelers, the way they play defense? What else is new with the way the Steelers are, you know, with their anemic offense? What else is new? What else is new? So you sit there and you look at it, you break this game down. The Steelers were able to run it a little bit better than I thought they would be able to do against the Titans defense. I think that was really the difference in the game from a Steelers standpoint. I mean, Traylon Warren, my man Najee Harris, both had really good games. Warren, that dude is really quick. He is really, obviously I understand why they're splitting carries in the backfield. This dude is really electric. He really is. I think I said Traylon Warren. I don't know where I get that from. Jaylen Warren, number 30 for the Steelers. I would love to see Najee Harris get more carries and all of that, but let's just be real. I mean, this dude Warren is legit as far as I can tell. But again, so it was really, I think, disappointing. The Titans give up 166 yards on the ground. For me, that was disappointing because they were able to get not much at all out of Kenny Pickett. I mean, this dude was horrible last night. I mean, I understand he ended up winning the game. He had engineered a couple plays on their game-winning drive, but really, this game was about their running game. I know he had to pass the touchdown to Deontay Johnson, who finally got into the end zone. I get it. This dude, Deontay Johnson, did not have a touchdown last season, if I'm correct, which is just insane to even think about. As many receptions as he had, he obviously went through some injuries this season. Really good to see him getting in the end zone. Happy for him. But Kenny Pickett, other than that, was horrible. This dude was missing passes left and right, and he was really keeping Tennessee in the game by doing so. I mean, I remember this pass to George Pickens on the just kind of this little 5-yard out pattern or whatever, and this dude sailed the ball over his head. I mean, it was really unbelievable. So everything was there for the Titans to win this football game, except the fact that they could not stop the run. Except for that. Even so, even without them stopping the run, even with them giving up 166 yards on the ground, the game was theirs for the taking. And they could not do it. And the reason why, in my opinion, is the conservative play style, especially on the offensive end. I say defensively as well. I thought we'd see a few more blitzes. They were unable to get any real pressure on Kenny Pickett for me all night. It really didn't matter. You didn't need to get any pressure on him because he wasn't completing passes anyway. But it would have been nice to get a little bit of pressure every now and then. I mean, I think the Titans had a couple sacks, but it wasn't as consistent as I wanted it to be. And on the other end, obviously, the Steelers were able to get to Will Levis quite a bit, especially early in the game. But I think Will Levis, I'm going to talk about him right now. I think he was able to adapt. I think he was able to kind of settle into the game as the game went on. And I think he was kind of able to feel where that pressure was coming from a lot quicker than he was early in the game, and it helped him a lot. Even though the Titans only scored 3 points in the second half, I thought he was a lot more effective. I think the issue was the conservative play calling. That's what I think it was. I mean, and for me, that goes back to Mike Vrabel. And I really give you two instances in this football game that really point out exactly what I'm talking about. And it's really neither one of they when especially when you sit there and look at both of them together, it doesn't really make sense. The first instance came right there at the end of the first half. You're talking about a 10-10 game. The Steelers just scored. They just kicked a field goal. Tennessee came right back down the field, led by Will Levis. Right? You get down in scoring position. I thought they got a little bit further in. It was a 36-yard field goal by Nick Folk, so that means they were at the 19-yard line, where that's where the line of scrimmage was. I'm thinking they got a little bit further in than that, but I could be wrong. But either way, it doesn't really matter. You had between 15 and 20 seconds on the clock. The Titans had a timeout in their pocket because they ended up using the timeout there with, 2 seconds or something like that, and ended up kicking the field goal to go out with 13-10 lead at the half. Okay, so you had a timeout. Instead of saying, you know what, okay, let's throw the ball, let's see if we can get the ball in the end zone, they decide to run the ball up the middle and just milk the rest of the clock. They milk the rest of the clock down. Call timeout, kick field goal. I mean, you had a chance to at least run one play, probably two plays, from inside the red zone. I cannot understand that. I understand that Will Levis was a rookie, this is his second game starting and all of that. I get all of that. But let this dude kind of let him go a little bit, man. I did not get that call at all. And so it's basically like you're playing for a 16-13 type game. And you know that that doesn't work. It even though we knew that's the kind of game it was going to be, you can't play it like that. You got to try to get as many opportunities. You got to take advantage of opportunities to score as best you possibly can. And they did not do that on that drop. So, yeah, they get the three. They go out with the lead at halftime. But who knows? Maybe they get six. You got DeAndre Hopkins on your team. Who's to say you would not have scored a touchdown right there? And you're talking about a totally different game at that point. Instead of it being at that, 13-10, you're talking about 17-10. And of course, that would have been huge if you get, again, that's a big if you to score. There's no guarantee that the Titans would have scored a touchdown. No guarantee. But if you do, guess what? Then obviously the whole, I think the momentum really changes. There's a huge change in momentum at that point. Titans get the ball back in the second half, to start the second half. Again, it would have been difficult for them to get the ball into the end zone, but it would have been possible. I would have at least tried it. And Will Levis, to me, you don't have to be a seasoned veteran. I understand, though, seasoned veterans make mistakes in those situations and throw an interception or something like that. Even if he does, okay, so it's 10-10 going in at the half. If Will Levis throws a pick, if Joey Porter Jr. picks him off or whoever picks him off, it's still 10-10 going to the half. You're getting the ball back in the second half. So, where would the big deal have been? Okay, so now we understand that one. So we flip it to the end of the game. Fourth quarter, next to last drive. Now, the Titans are just, they get the first down there around midfield with the pass to, I think it was Hopkins on that play. There were a couple plays in that drive. Obviously, there was a penalty that sent the Titans back a few yards, if I'm not mistaken, but they ended up getting it back to, I think, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, somewhere in that range. Now, there's about 3 minutes left in the game. Obviously, you're thinking about possibly that being 4-down territory. Okay, if you're thinking it, guess what? Guess who else is thinking it could be 4-down territory? The defense, the Steelers. So instead, for me, I understand there's no really one play you might could dial up on third down to get you, make sure you get a few yards or something. But for me, I would have rather seen something, some sort of quick pass, maybe to try to get a few of those yards, and then you say, okay, you know what, we can get it to. If we get it to 4th and 3 or under or something like that, then we're going to go for it. I'd understood that. Instead, you run the ball. If I'm not mistaken, it was Tajay Sharp. I could be wrong about that, but I'm thinking it was Tajay Sharp. Which, okay, yeah, you maybe trying to throw the Steelers off. Say, okay, yeah, we got Tajay Sharp in the game, so maybe we might throw. Look, the Steelers are smarter than that. Okay. They know you're running in that situation more than likely. So you get stuffed. So it's still 4th and 6, 4th and 7, 4th and 8, somewhere in that range. You're just inside midfield. That's around the 45-yard line, somewhere like that. For me, I've got all 3 timeouts. The Titans had all 3 timeouts. If I've got all 3 timeouts, I've still got 3 minutes to go. You still have 2-minute warning, so basically you have 4 timeouts. I'm punting. Okay? So you're going to sit here. At the end of the half, you're going to sit there and play for a field goal. And not put your quarterback in harm's way. But, at the end of the game, with three timeouts and possibly a chance to pin the Steelers deep inside their five-yard line or something like that, if Stonehouse can put it in the right spot. Oh, now let's put him in harm's way on fourth and long and in a situation the Steelers know he's got to throw the football. So let's put him in that situation and let's see what he does. Absolutely no sense at all. Made absolutely zero sense. And for me, that goes all the way back to Mike Vrabel. Obviously, Titans don't get the first down. They end up giving the Steelers the football right there at midfield. They stuff the Steelers in three plays. They get the ball back, but now you only got one timeout. And guess what? The Steelers are punting from their 40-yard line instead of maybe their 10-yard line or their 5-yard line or something like that, where you could get really good field position. Instead of starting maybe, who knows, maybe around midfield, maybe at least the 40, 45-yard line, you're starting to drive back at the 20, at the 15-yard line. You had to drive 85 yards. give Will Levis credit. He drove 69 of those yards. Give him credit. I don't care if he threw the interception at the end. I know he threw up two other passes that could have been interceptions or probably even should have been interceptions on that drive. I'm not mad at him one bit. Dude balled out when he had the chance. He balled out. His coaches, and namely for me, I'm not really sure how much impact or influence Tim Kelly has. That's the offensive coordinator for the Titans. I'm not really sure how much pull he has in calling plays and situations like a fourth down or how much pull he has in, okay, let's go for a fourth down or let's not go for it or whatever. I'm not really sure how that hierarchy works within the Titans system. I'm not really sure. It doesn't matter for me. It goes back to Mike Vrabel. I'm sorry. It just does. You sit there and you don't want to put him in harm's way at halftime in a tie game in which you're going to get the football back to start the second half. But, oh, yeah, we're going to put him in harm's way at the end of the game when we might could have gotten a better situation if we had just punted the damn ball. Anyway, Titans go down 20-16. And they go to 3-5 in the league on the season. Pretty frustrating loss, to say the least. Pretty frustrating. But that was just my thoughts on it, man. I'm not putting my quarterback in harm's way if I sit there in the fourth quarter if I didn't put him in harm's way at halftime. Makes zero sense, dude. Anyway, that does not diminish what Will Levis was able to do. It does not diminish the three touchdown passes that he threw to DeAndre Hopkins in the Falcons game. It does not diminish his four touchdown game. Huge game for Will Levis. For me, look, thank you, Ryan Tannehill, for everything you've done for the Titans franchise and all of that. Appreciate it. But when you're sitting there getting that type of production, you got to ride it out. And the word that I'm hearing is, soon as Ryan Tannehill is well, soon as he is healthy, he is going back to be the starting quarterback. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is Mike Vrabel for you. That is Mike Vrabel all day long. Anyway, we'll see how that works out. Yeah, man, huge win for the Steelers, though. Congrats to them. They go 5-3, and a lot of talk about what they're doing right now. Are they a playoff team? Is this a really good coaching job by Mike Tomlin, or maybe how good a coaching job is this for Mike Tomlin? I think it's pretty good. I thought the Steelers were a team that could get possibly to a wild card spot. Ultimately, I kind of did not think that they would. I mean, this is a good football. I think they have a lot of good players, but I think this team is overachieving. I'm sorry. I do. I understand that they do have I think the roster is pretty good in a lot of areas. I think they have some shortcomings. I think they could use another receiver or two to go with Pickens. Obviously, quarterback has been an issue. A lot of people are pointing at the OC, the offensive coordinator, Canada. I think that's what his name is. A lot of people pointing at that. I'm sorry. I think it's a pretty good team, but I don't think it's just, oh yeah, that's a playoff team. No, I think this is a damn good coaching job by Mike Tomlin. I do. And that's just kind of the culture that he has going on there in Pittsburgh. So yeah, man. Yeah, let's look. Actually, we'll come back, man. Let's switch gears now. Let's get into college football. We'll come back to the NFL here in a little bit as I get my picks on. A couple nice games to talk about here in the South, the AFC and the NFC South. We'll look at those games when I do my picks a little bit later in the show. But right now, let's get into college football. Let's kind of switch gears. The Alabama Crimson Tide, man. Yeah, let's get into them. Yeah, man, obviously, huge game. They're at Bryant-Denny Stadium Saturday night. The LSU Tigers come to town. Doesn't get much bigger than that. Alabama undefeated in the SEC, atop the SEC West. The LSU with the one loss there at Ole Miss in the SEC West. So, again, this is LSU still needs a little bit of help from Ole Miss. Alabama basically just has to win out. Very interesting matchup because this game is not what it's not what it used to be. Obviously, this game used to be a defensive battle back, you know, early in Nick Saban's tenure at Alabama. Les Miles was the head coach there at LSU. How things have changed. I mean, things have changed mightily. It's turned into a much more offensive game. Obviously, we had the 2019 game with the Joe Burrow and Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase and Clyde Edwards-Hilaire. And you can just go on and on and on with the team there at LSU. Alabama obviously had Tua. Just basically turn on your TV on Sundays. That's all you got to do. They had Tua and they had Devontae Smith. And all of those dudes, Najee Harris. And LSU was able to come into Tuscaloosa and pull out a huge win that day in the shootout. I think that score ended up 46-41, something like that. Now we've gotten to the point where Alabama is playing with Jalen Milroe, who's done, for me, I think has done a really good job overall. He's had his issues here and there, but he's done a fantastic job. But he is not a Tua. He's not a Bryce Young. He's not a Jalen Hurts yet. So can Alabama win a game? This is an LSU team that a lot of people think is the best offense in the country. I mean, look at neighbors, wide receiver spot on the outside. You have a guy like Jaden Daniels, that is a quarterback who to me should be in the top two or three for the Heisman race easily, at least three. I think he should at least be third. I probably would have him behind Penix and Harrison Jr. at this point, but he'd be right there. I mean, those three, I think, to me, should be really close. And so, this offense can definitely get the job done. They have put up a lot of points, a lot of yards on most of the teams that they've played. Alabama has been the opposite. The offense has been very inconsistent the last few games. Let's look at it. The Ole Miss game. Alabama wins that game 24-10. Got off to a horrible start in the first half offensively. Second half, they lit it up. Well, I'm not going to say they lit it up. Damn. That's probably going a little bit overboard. I'm not going to say they lit it up, but they did what they had to do. The offense played well. They won the game. Texas A&M. offense looked pretty rough at points in the first half. They came out, did what they had to do in the second half. Tennessee game. Same thing. Arkansas. Before that, Arkansas game, they flipped. They got off to a really good start against Arkansas, and then they did nothing in the second half. And then versus Tennessee, they went back to their old ways. They went bad first half, and they did really well in the second half and were able to win a huge game there, 34-22, just the other Saturday against the Tennessee Volunteers. Huge, huge win. I don't think they can get away with that type of inconsistency against a team like LSU that can definitely put 30-something on the board against this Alabama defense. I don't know if LSU can get to 40. I don't know, but I definitely think they can score 30. The other part of that, of this game, really, is LSU's defense. It's, in a lot of ways, it's reminiscent of that 2019 defense. I mean, they really got off to a bad start that season, and as the season went on, their defense got a lot better. They still were not. That was the only part of that team that had that you would call kind of a flaw. They were good enough to win a national championship, but it didn't matter really. As long as they just kind of showed up, the offense was going to score, was going to outscore everyone. So this year around, I don't know if they can really count on that. So this defense to me is going to have to be counted on at least a little. I mean, sorry, the defense is going to be counted on at least a little to least kind of slow a team down like Alabama. But again, you see how different this matchup is from what it used to be, even from just a few seasons ago. So for me, man, I think the bye week came at a really good time for Alabama. I mean, there's no coincidence. Alabama has had the same bye week, I think, ever since Nick Saban has been in town. And I think it works just fine. You kind of, you know, there have been several seasons where Alabama's had a lot of injuries or whatever, and they've been able to, or they've had some kind of lackadaisical play, even though they would win the games that they were playing before their bye week. They would have some lackadaisical games, and then that bye week would be a time for them to get things together. I think this is the time for it. I think this is the time, especially from an offensive standpoint, that Alabama really need to kind of work on some things. I think there were a few, a few injuries here and there, defensively and offensively, that they needed to kind of, kind of get healed up or whatever. Again, I think this is a good time for that. And I think Alabama getting the game in Tuscaloosa is huge. I mean, when I look at the schedule, man, usually I know when, I know obviously if Alabama plays LSU in Baton Rouge or vice versa, I know that they're going to do the opposite the next season. There's no question about this. So I really, it's not really about me looking at the schedule or whatever necessarily, but I know that, I mean, basically, when I'm trying to prognosticate or whatever or predict what type season Alabama's going to have, I look basically two or three games. And usually the first two games I look at are LSU and Auburn. And, usually they're playing one or the other at home and the other on the road. So, but you know that's what it's going to come down to. So, for me, man, well, I think there are a lot of reasons I could sit here and tell you that LSU is maybe the better team overall. A lot of reasons. They definitely have the best quarterback on the field. I don't think there's any question about that. Now, could Jalen Milroe come out and play better than Jaden Daniels on Saturday night? Absolutely. I'm not going to sit here and say that. Jalen Milroe has done his thing. He's been a lot better than a lot of people want to give him credit for being, Alabama fans included. But he's going to have to come up big. But the defense also is going to have to come up big. They cannot, to me, get into a shootout and expect to score 40 points. I think they have to keep it as, you know, conventional as possible. Again, I like Alabama's chances in this game. I think LSU, I think it's going to be a whale of a game. I really do. But I like the Tide. I'll give you my score prediction here a little bit later on. But, yes, I like Alabama to win this football game. I really do. But I think it's going to be really tight. On the other side, Georgia Bulldogs. But first, you know, I did really tease about Ole Miss a little while ago, talking about the rankings. The rankings came out. Let me go with that first before I kind of talk a little bit about Georgia. But the rankings, the college football playoff rankings, look pretty much exactly how I thought that they would look. I think if it were my ranking, the changes I would make, I would slide Michigan out and I would slide Washington in. That's the change I would make. So you got Georgia 1. You got Ohio State 1, which I have no problem with that because I think you look back at Ohio State's schedule. That win, the win over Notre Dame, is standing tall right now, and they also beat Penn State. I don't think another team has two wins like that. So for me, I have no issue with Ohio State being number 1. Number 2, obviously Georgia. For obvious reasons, I would have had the same thing. Number 3, Florida State. I would have had the same thing there. And number 4, like I said, I would have had Washington. I think the win over Oregon is better than anything that Michigan has done. But the committee has Michigan ahead of the Washington Huskies at this point. I mean, look, it's not a big deal. But for me, I think you have to put Washington at 4. You have... I obviously have Michigan at 4, Washington 5, Oregon 6, Texas 7, Alabama 8, Oklahoma 9, team that lost last weekend. Huge loss for them last week at Kansas. Not a, you know, look, it was an upset to a degree, but not a crushing loss necessarily for them. It's a loss that I can see them having. It was a close loss. So, look, I mean, if things work out for them, they can still get back in it. It's going to take a little bit of they're going to need some help. So, Oklahoma's 9 and, of course, Ole Miss is 10. I don't have any problems. Again, like I said, I don't really have a problem even with the way it is. I just would have slid Washington ahead of Michigan at this point. That's the only thing. But everything is right for Alabama, man, for them to move up. And even, I mean, Ole Miss needs some chaos, but Ole Miss isn't out of this thing. And I will say this. LSU, a lot, everybody sat there and left them for dead after their loss to Ole Miss. I don't think they're out of it. Now, it would take a good bit for LSU to get back into this thing. But if you tell me, which I don't want it to happen, now, you know, if you listen to the show, you know I'm an Alabama fan, so I don't want this to happen. But I got to throw it out there anyway, in my opinion, because if LSU wins out, and they win out, and they beat Georgia in the SEC championship game, and, you know, we know Ohio State or Michigan is going to have a loss. That's possible. That Washington could have a loss. Oregon could have another loss. Who knows what's going to happen with Texas and Oklahoma? I mean, it is not to me. If they do that, it is not, in my opinion, out of the realm of possibility that the LSU could jump back into this thing. Again, it would take a lot to happen, but I would not say that this team from Baton Rouge is completely out of the playoff race. But that's just my opinion. So we'll see how it goes. But the one team that we know is in the playoff race, and they're going for their third consecutive title, the Georgia Bulldogs, they absolutely did not need Brock Bowers. 43-20 victory over the Florida Gators. Huge, huge win for them. look, man, they just get it done. You got to give them credit. Point blank simple. They just get it done. So my prop, I give them major props, man. I give them major props. I really do. And we'll see how Brock Bowers can, if he can get back by SEC championship game time, whatever. Huge game this weekend, though, man. Missouri going into Sanford Stadium, going between the hedges. Last year, this game went right down to the wire. Georgia barely got out of Columbia, Missouri last year, and that was a much worse Missouri team last season. So, can Missouri, can they get that type of effort again on Saturday? Georgia, I think you saw a focused Georgia team go to Jacksonville last week and beat up on Florida. Maybe their focus isn't quite as razor sharp as it was last Saturday. I don't know. Again, I think Georgia wins the game. I'll give you my score prediction or whatever here in a few minutes, but we'll see how it goes. We'll just have to see. So there you go, man. A lot going on in the SEC. HBCUs, man. We'll talk about we have not talked about them very, very much here lately. Got to get back into that. And especially with the Celebration Bowl, everyone trying to jockey for position to get in there. Obviously, in SWAC, it's basically been FAMU and everyone else. We know that. FAMU has been doing their absolute thing. And I don't know if there's anyone in the SWAC that's really, truly going to be able to hang with them for real. You have to give them their props on that. The MEAC. MEAC, you have very similar situation there with North Carolina Central running away with things at 7-1. So it looks like a crash course between those two teams, but we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes, man. But I think that is going to be your matchup in just a few weeks there in Atlanta at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We'll see how that goes. Team I really want to talk about, though, Tennessee State, man. definitely not gotten into them much at all this season. Got to give them their props right now. In Ohio Valley, Tennessee State sits 3-1 in the league and 6-2 overall. They've trailed Southeast Missouri State right now. They're looking up at them. Southeast Missouri State is 4-0. So, huge game coming up this week for Tennessee State. I'm sorry, Tennessee State is 2-1. I'm sorry, they're just 2-1. So they're a little bit behind as far as playing the games in the conference right now. But Tennessee State trying to make their bid to possibly get into the playoff, and that would be humongous. They get Charleston Southern on Saturday. That is a road game. They're at Eastern Illinois, and then they play Tennessee Tech after that. Should be interesting to see if they can get into the playoffs. Should be interesting. So definitely pulling for them, but I know, man, just kind of looking at some of their games, the crowds have been really small there in Nashville for that Tennessee State team. Though a lot of people kind of trying to push for a little bit better attendance at those football games. So hopefully they'll get that. They have one home game left, and that's Tennessee Tech. That will be on the 18th of November. So hopefully they can get that straightened out. Anyway, man, we'll talk about them a lot coming up here in future shows. All right, man, let's switch gears again. Let's get into some picks, man. Let's look at the NFL and college games coming up this weekend. All right, y'all. Yeah, like I said, let's go on and get into these NFL and college picks for this weekend's football. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Let's go on and get into it. Couple big games. We're going to look at several games here in the NFL. We'll start off with some of the lightweight games. We got the Colts at Carolina this coming weekend. Colts went down to the Saints 38-27 last week in Indianapolis. They get the Panthers as they continue their tour around the NFC South. The Panthers got their first victory last week over the Houston Texans. So, huge game for those purposes for Carolina. Obviously, I'm sure they would love to win, get a kind of a win streak going to kind of feel good about themselves and all of that. But they come into this game 2.5-point dogs at home to the Colts. I like the Colts to get that done. I think they win it minus the 2.5 there in Charlotte. Minnesota traveling to Atlanta, and we all know about Kirk Cousins. Really terrible situation. Really hate that for him. I definitely wish for a speedy recovery for him as he undergoes Achilles surgery. He had the Achilles injury this past Sunday. The Vikings go into Atlanta 3.5-point dogs. Give me the Falcons. Falcons trying to stay right there at or near the top in the NFC South. 3.5-point favorites. I like the Falcons in that football game. Minus 3.5. You got the Bears traveling to New Orleans. New Orleans coming off their victory against Indianapolis. They come in this game at Caesars Superdome. They come in 8-point favorites. I like the Saints to get that one done. I think they cover the 8 points. They probably win that game by double digits. We'll see. But tell you what, the Saints team has just been up and down. Really not sure what to expect. But that is what I'm going to stick with. I'll predict them to win that game. And final game of the teams around this area, Tampa Bay. The Buccaneers, who are falling on hard times here lately, traveling to Houston. They've lost a couple in a row. They need this game really bad. They come in 3-point dogs to the Texans. Really intriguing game. Really intriguing. I've been wrong a couple of times on the Texans picking them at home. So I'm not really sure which route to go with this one. Really not. But I'm going to go with the Texans to win this game. Coming off the loss to Carolina, I can go either way with this game. Again, I like the Texans, but again, it would not surprise me if the Buccaneers, if they win it at all, it would not surprise me at all. So, but give me the Texans minus 3 points in that game. And then the team, not in the AFC South, not in the NFC South, but down in the South, the Miami Dolphins. Huge game versus the Chiefs. They're in Germany, Frankfurt, Germany. Sunday morning, early Sunday morning, 8:30 my time, 9:30 Eastern or whatever. West Coast, I guess, was 6:30. Crazy, right? Okay, you got the Dolphins at the Chiefs. Really intriguing football games, to say the least. Both these teams come in atop their divisions. Both teams come in 6-2. The Chiefs coming off of that stunner of a loss to Denver this past weekend. Interesting game. Chiefs come in 1.5-point favorites. Man, I don't know whether to trust the Chiefs offense, which has been shaky at times, which I don't think we should be surprised at. Or I'm not sure if I should trust the Dolphins defense in this game. Dolphins have been shaky at times. I think maybe at the worst moments, the two losses that they had, Buffalo and to Philadelphia a couple weeks ago, probably their worst defensive performances of the season. So, give me the Chiefs, man. I could go either way on this game as well. Give me the Chiefs. I think they get, probably a little bit pissed off that they lost that game to Denver last week. We'll see if they can carry that that anger all the way across the pond. We'll see. But I like the Chiefs to win that game. I say probably my score that I would predict would be 27-24 Kansas City. Should be a really good football game early Sunday morning. Let's look at a couple other games. And a couple other games that I want to look at, because I definitely want to talk about a couple things that went on this past week in around the NFL. You look at one of the bigger games this week is Seattle Seahawks going to Baltimore. I like the Ravens to win that game, but I think, you know, talking about the Ravens being a 6-point favorite, given the Ravens at home, I like them to win that football game. You look at big game in the second, I guess you call it the afternoon window on Sunday, the Cowboys at the Eagles. Obviously, very interesting game right there. Divisional game, NFC East. Jalen Hurts versus Dak Prescott, all of that. Eagles coming to this game, 3-point favorites at home. Give me the Eagles over the Cowboys. I like them to win that game. Should be a good one, though. We will see how it goes, but I like the Eagles. The Eagles have played some really tight games at home. They played two tight games against Washington this season. Really tight games. So, but the Eagles are getting it done. They're getting everybody's best punch for the most part, and they're handling it. And that's all you can do as a team that was the runner-up in the Super Bowl. That's all you can do. So, give me the Eagles to win that game. And then Sunday night football, you had the Buffalo Bills and the Bengals. The Bengals getting their stuff back together right now. I never really was off of their bandwagon. I picked them to go to the Super Bowl this season against the 49ers. I think that they have really started to get everything together, and that's a good thing for them. The Bengals really doing their thing right now. But they come off a huge victory, 31-17 at Levi's Stadium over the 49ers. 49ers, by the way. First big news in the NFL. They go out and say, oh, you know what, man, we lost the game. We gave 31 points to Joe Burrow and Cincinnati Bengals. We're not supposed to do that. We're a Super Bowl contender. We're everyone's favorite to win the Super Bowl. So guess what? Man, we need to add another pass rusher. To go with Bosa, to go with all everybody else we have, to go with Fred Warner, who might be one of who's probably, if not the best middle linebacker in the league, he's one of the best. And all of that, and everyone else that they have on that football team, they go out and they get Chase Young in a trade with the Commanders. The Commanders also trade away Montez Sweat to the Chicago Bears. Former Mississippi State defensive lineman. Crazy stuff, man, there at the trade deadline. But, yeah, the 49ers bolstering their defense even more. Should be very interesting. But this game, this particular game, Sunday Night Football, I like the Bengals in this game. Again, this has been a really good rivalry the last couple of years. Really good Sunday football, if you sit there and you look at it. 2.5-point favorite, the Bengals are at home. I like them in that game, and I think they can win that game probably 30-27, something like that. Should be a really good game there in Cincinnati. Another big news maker in the NFL, the Las Vegas Raiders finally getting rid of Josh McDaniels. Don't know what took them so long. Josh Daniels. Don't know what took them so long, but they finally did it. They also get rid of the GM there for good reason. We all know what the hell is going on there. It's not been anything good. Both of those changes being made, I think it was Tuesday night. I think that was what it was. I think I saw that early Wednesday morning. So the Raiders kind of trying to start over there, trying to keep guys like Davante Adams happy. We'll see how that goes here in the future. But they have a long road back to respectability there in Las Vegas. So those are my NFL picks. What about the college ranks? What about college, man? Yeah, you know we got a lot of big games to look at, and let's get started with it. excuse me on that. We'll get to that. Obviously, get to the big one of Saturday, LSU and Alabama in just a minute, obviously. But let's go to a few other games before we get to that one. Starting out in the SEC. Hold on, let's see. Let me get back to my. Make sure I got the right thing here. All right, we got really two big games. We'll talk about them last. We got Kentucky and Mississippi State, which I think is a very interesting game. Kentucky trying to right the ship. They sit 5-3 right now. Huge game for them as they teams start to set themselves up for bowl games. Obviously, the more you win, the better the bowl game. We'll see. Mississippi State comes in 4-4. I like Mississippi State at home. Mississippi State coming off the loss at Auburn. I like Mississippi State at home to get to 5-4. Obviously, they need one more after that to get the bowl eligibility. So with Kentucky at that point. Kentucky is Alabama's opponent next Saturday, which could be an interesting game. That game will be played in Lexington. So, but anyway, give me the Mississippi State Bulldogs tomorrow evening against the Kentucky Wildcats. Okay, so let's move on. We got, let's see where we're going to go next. Texas A&M at Ole Miss. Ole Miss number 10, again, in the rankings, hosting the Aggies. Ole Miss comes in 3-point favorites. They're at the Grove. They're the first game out of Sports Center or Game Day or whatever. I like the Rebels in that football game. The Aggies are still, again, they're trying to fight to get to a respectable bowl of their own. They sit 5-3 right now, but I like Ole Miss at home in that football game. Again, talk briefly about Lane Kiffin and the job that he's done so far there this season at Ole Miss. I really like what I've seen. Yeah, I like them to beat the Aggies tomorrow. Let's see a couple other matchups we can look at. Arkansas at Florida. Florida, I think, should get back on the winning track. If they, again, they need a couple, you know, they need at least one more win, but they need a couple wins to get to a bowl that they would be kind of proud of or whatever. So maybe they need three wins, but they need at least two to get to 7. So I think they get one tomorrow against Arkansas. They come in 3.5-point favorites. I like the Gators, but we'll see how that goes right there. The other games in the conference, Jacksonville State could be an interesting game. Jacksonville State obviously doing very well in their first season in Conference USA. They play at South Carolina. Don't sleep on that game. Jacksonville State in the past has won a couple games. One game against SEC opponent. That was Ole Miss a few years ago. Don't sleep on that game tomorrow. Jacksonville State is very capable of going up there and hanging in and giving the Gamecocks some problems. No question about that. UConn and Tennessee, obviously, you have to like the Vols in that game. Auburn at Vanderbilt. Auburn goes up there 12.5-point favorite coming off their first SEC win last week. I like them against Vanderbilt up there in Nashville. Now let's get to the big ones, man. Let's get to the big ones. Missouri at Georgia. And really, truly, I guess really this probably is the, if you go by rankings, this is the bigger game. Missouri is ranked 12th. And obviously Georgia's ranked number 2. So this is technically the bigger game. But obviously we're going to go with this one first. Missouri, the Tigers at Georgia. Georgia 15.5-point favorites. I like the Dogs to win this game. Would not surprise me if Missouri comes in within the number, but I'm going to go with Georgia to win it. I say the Dogs win this game probably 34-17, something like that, and they get a huge win and continue to stay undefeated. And then the big one, Saturday night in Tuscaloosa, Alabama comes in I've seen this number fluctuate a little bit. At first, I saw like 2 points, Alabama favorite, maybe 1.5. Now it's up to 3.5. I like Alabama in this football game. I just think simple fact of them playing at home helps them in this game. Obviously, that's not necessarily a huge thing. LSU was able to do it 2019, so it would not shock me at all. Would be no surprise at all if LSU wins this game. But I really like this Alabama defense. I think they'll be good enough. And I like Alabama to win this game. Oh, boy. Picking the score is going to be tough. But I'm going to go something like last year's score, man. It's not too far from that. I'm going to say Alabama 33-27. Really good game in Tuscaloosa. Give me the Tide. Minus the 3.5 on Saturday night. Let's look at a couple of games around the country. Just really quick before we get up out of here and close it out. Kansas State, Texas, that's a huge game in the Big 12. Again, Texas, they need to win that game badly to continue to stay in the playoff hunt. 3.5 point favors. I think Texas, again, we'll see how they do without Ewers. Quinn Ewers is not available for them, dealing with that injury. Should be interesting, but I think Texas finds a way to pull it out. You got Oklahoma traveling to Oklahoma State. That could be a very interesting game. Number 9 against number 22, Bedlam. I don't know. 6-point favorite, the Sooners come in. I like Oklahoma State to cover those 6 points, but I think probably Oklahoma State wins. But would not surprise me at all. I mean, again, like I said, I think Oklahoma loses another game somewhere along the line. It could be Saturday in Stillwater. We'll see how that goes. You got a couple other nice games, man. Washington at SC. Could this be where Washington kind of takes their loss? They come in 3-point favorites at the Coliseum. Now, look. SC, we know how the struggles that they've had. But, I mean, kind of the pressure's off of them now. I mean, they're not going to the playoff. The pressure is off of them. So this is what kind of happens in college football. I mean, it happens in every sport, but especially college football toward the end of the season. A lot of teams that are trying to remain undefeated are playing against teams that really don't have a whole lot to lose. And that's kind of what this game is for Washington coming up Saturday. But USC's defense is so bad. I mean, that's the caveat to this whole thing. That's the caveat. So, give me Washington to win that game. It would not shock me at all if SC wins there at home. Again, should be a really good weekend of football Saturday and Sunday. Got Notre Dame Clemson game. I did not talk about Clemson. You know, I was going to come out with a soundbite from Dabo Swinney. Man, this dude is kind of he's kind of going off on a fan, which a lot of what he was saying I agreed with. He was telling the fan, look, I mean, you know, there's no appreciation for what Clemson has done as a program. They've been one of the best programs. Obviously, they've been one of the best two or three programs the last 10 years or so. We all know about that. But, again, Dabo, you know how this thing goes. That's one of the reasons you're making the money that you're making, because you have to deal with stuff like that. So I can see, again, I can understand where he's coming from, Dabo, what I'm saying. But I also can understand where the fan was coming from. It's like, okay, well, you're 4-4. They've lost 4 games this season, man. And they're probably going to lose again Saturday against Notre Dame. The game is at Clemson. The Irish come in 3-point favorite, but we'll see how it goes. Very, very interesting stuff there in Clemson. Anyway, man. We're going to get out of here. I think I've covered just about everything I wanted to cover. I don't think I have anything else for you guys right now. Huge games. We'll see how all these games shake out this coming weekend. We'll talk some more NBA next week as we kind of dissect and kind of analyze the teams starting out the season and everything. We'll see what everybody has in store for the rest of the season and all that. Kind of look at this in-season tournament. We'll do all of that next week as well. Obviously, we'll come back, talk a lot of football. College basketball starting up next week. Almost forgot about that. Huge. on Twitter last night, talking about John Calipari playing against Kentucky State, who was an HBCU. Division 3 level or so, I think. The exhibition game where he was kind of telling them, the coach, don't play zone because my players aren't really adapted to a zone yet, so don't play zone. something crazy like that. I don't know, man. I don't know what's going on in Lexington, Kentucky, man. But, yeah, college basketball starts next week. We'll talk some more about that. We'll should have kind of had a preview of that to talk about here this week, but we'll get into that next week as well as we start to look at the SEC and all of that. Definitely appreciate you coming in. Follow me, man, at Seawood on Sports on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, and IG. Follow the show. I can see when I'm dropping new content and all of that. Definitely follow me and let's join in. Let's kind of talk some sports or whatever you want to talk about. I'm down for whatever. And again, I definitely follow back. Anyway, man, I really appreciate you coming in. Please like, subscribe, do all those things. And come back next week to Ball About the South with Seawood. I'm out until next time.